Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening, we'll talk about the intersection of the role of the International Criminal Court and regional blocs in Africa. And with us tonight is Fred Omolo. He's a Kenyan journalist. He joins us by phone from Kisumu. Good evening, Fred. Hello, Fred, are you there? I think we may have lost Fred. Fred is not there. We also have a regular panelist, Freeman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the listeners.
How are you doing today?
Very fine. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You're very much welcome. As I said, our topic tonight, we are looking at the intersection of the role of the International Criminal Court, popularly known as ICC, and regional blocs in Africa. I'm wondering whether we have Fred now. Fred will join us as soon as we can get back to him. I think the line may have dropped. So, Suleiman, as I was saying, we're talking about the intersection of the role of the ICC and regional blocs in Africa. Former Ivory Coast President Laura Gbagbo is now in Belgium under conditional release after being acquitted by the ICC. The conditions include that Gbagbo will return to court if required for a post-prosecution appeal against the acquittal, and the 73-year-old surrenders his passport to the Belgian authorities. So for now, he's in Belgium and a visa, I think, for 90 days, I understand. I understand we have Fred now. Fred, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. We had that telephone glitch. As I said, we're talking about the intersection of the ICC and regional blocs. Now, Suleiman, Gbagbo's trial and acquittal in The Hague, and now he's being granted some stay in Belgium. What does that say about Africa? An African former African leader tried in The Hague, now he's in Belgium. What does that say about the status of regional blocs? Who could have worked to solve this problem?
Definitely, without doubt, it shows that while the internal mechanism may be weak and may not be able to try a former president, the regional organization should have been in position to intervene. But basically, even before we talk of trying a former president, why should the regional organizations allow an individual or a group of individuals to violate people's rights within particular country at their watch? So to begin with, there is a failure, first of all, allowing these leaders to continue violating the rights of the citizens whom they lead. I think it is a high time the continental organization, the AU, and the regional organization to take a stand and start moving against these leaders who are violating the rights of the people. Definitely, as far as Gbagbo is concerned, there is no doubt that during the confusion of his refusal to leave power in 2011, he led to death of over 3,000 people, and the people needed justice. I think the intervention of the ICC was not wrong. It showed that there was no alternative to be done, and I think they have done a good job. Yes, the acquittal has got both the positives and the negatives, but on the whole, at least it has happened. The positive is that much as he has been acquitted, we should not forget that he has spent 7 years in prison. That one alone is a plus to the impunity which is being exercised by these leaders on the continent. Yes, he has been acquitted. The people, the victims may not have got justice. The victim the victims may not have been compensated, but at least he has spent 7 years in prison. That one is a good lesson on itself. At least all the wings which he carried himself, he thought was above the law. He thought was a god himself. At least his wings were chopped, and he was able to sleep in the dungeons for the 7 years. This is what they have done to the others. This is what many African leaders are doing to the other citizens. It is good that he faces the cold rooms, because these are the cold rooms they put their citizens in.
I see. Fred, what's your take on Bagbo's acquittal and him now having to stay in Belgium for some time as he waits for an appeal, should there be one from the prosecution?
I tend to find Suleiman a little bit optimistic and idealistic. Yeah. I'm a little bit more skeptical about regional blocs in Africa, of which, of course, the mother bloc is the AU. Try to understand, the AU is not something that you could probably compare with the EU, right? It's a totally different thing. This is a gathering, a cabal of people who have come together to exploit their countries, their respective countries and continents. I'll give you an example of evidence of this. When our two leaders who are now in power in Kenya had an issue at the ICC, they actually mobilized the AU, and the AU threatened to withdraw all African countries from the ICC, okay? So the AU is not there to address issues that affect Africa at the grassroots level, social, economic, financial, or health issues. No, it is there as a platform which a special group, you know, like a secret society, that if you become, or if you grab power in your country, you join it, and it backs you, mm-hmm. protects you. Why were the French forces able to react much faster in Ivory Coast when Bagbo had an issue and there was a post-election violence in that country? Why were foreign powers reacting much faster than the AU forces or the AU secretariat? Because Bagbo knew these people have my back, so he could do anything in his country. And when things went wrong, the AU probably called him and told him, can you please sort that thing out before it explodes in our faces, of which he didn't. Okay? That is my first view. My second view, I think the ICC underestimated the capabilities of offenders from the African continent. You've seen the collapse of cases, the two cases in Kenya. You've seen the collapse of the case in the DRC, and now you're seeing the collapse of the case in Ivory Coast. These people might be terrible leaders and totally incompetent and corrupt in their own countries, but they can marshal the best forces across the world to defend them at a global level.
I see.
So the ICC has clearly underestimated that. And even if they held them for that long period, there's not much they could do when this guy got his defenses together.
I see. Suleiman, following up on Fred's point there, it's true that these regional blocs and AU, the motherlode of all of them, they defend their own. He mentions the Uhuru Ruto group, that the case collapsed before the ICC. Sudan's Bashir, there has been a warrant on his head, but they have managed to protect him. So Bagbo now is acquitted. So maybe the two ICC and these blocks work in opposite directions.
Yeah, I was only putting in. I agree with the fact that the AU has been a disgrace, and it is a combination of it's a club of dictators as such. But we are putting in a word because the West African region has been a better region than these other regions. At least it has been able to organize itself. It has been able to do some good work, for example, in Zambia. It is getting firm now compared to the others. But by and large, the others, the East African community, the SADC, and the AU itself, it's largely really useless as far as the interests of the people are concerned. As we have mentioned, we have just looked at, when you look at the Eastern Center, the crisis has been in DRC, and the organizations have been there, SADC has been there, AU has been there. What has it done for the people? As far as DRC is concerned, since 1998, the country has lost close to 5 million people. When these organizations can do nothing. In the end, when there is some semblance, they want to arrange elections, then they start to pretend that they care so much when a lot of blood has been shed. So these organizations, by and large, agree with it, that they have not helped the ordinary man on the street. That is why we have got restlessness on the continent. You can see that the whole region, apart from West Africa, Eastern Central, is just fragile. It's just restless because there is lack of leadership, not only internally, but also in the regional organizations which should have intervened to help.
Fred, in that case, the regional blocks are serving a disservice because they are not solving any problem. Actually, they're in solidarity with the leaders.
Yeah, they have hear no evil, see no evil kind of approach to what happens within the borders of their neighbors, right? We had an issue in 2007, and all our neighbors were just confused until Condoleezza Rice came all the way from Washington, D.C. And she was the one who came, and whatever it is, she told the two principals. At that time, it was President Kibaki on one side and Raila Odinga, the perennial opposition, on the other, right? People like Kagame came and released some very strong hints about what could be done, but none of them were able to force us, to come and sit down and talk to each other. Take a case of South Sudan right now. It's massive looting going on there right now, and it actually is known through Kenyan banks. It is a fact. It is known, it is spoken about everywhere, even in Kenyan media. Everyone talks about it openly. We see South Sudanese leaders here in Kenya, in all the major cities, making investments, looting that country. No one is pushing them. The EACC is not telling them anything. The AU is not telling them anything, right? Mm-hmm. So it's sort of an attitude of, you just do what you want in your country and don't interfere in mine. Make sure my imports pass through your territory safely, and I will make sure I don't mess you up when you're in trouble. It's scratch my back, I scratch yours kind of approach, right?
Yes. And I say, Suleiman, talking of South Sudan, apart from the looting of the country, of course it's true that most Southern Sudan officials have amassed wealth and they're investing in Kenya, neighboring countries, in Uganda, buying houses. The people suffer, and the war kept on for a long time, and the regional bloc just kept dilly-dallying, didn't do anything. Actually, it was admitted even in the South African community, but then nothing happened.
That is the irony. You wonder why these organizations are here. The countries are collapsing at the moment. Of course, there is a crisis of leadership. For example, in the whole Eastern Central, the leaders have overstayed. The people are tired. They want to throw away these leaders. Now the leaders are they are on rampage. They are doing anything they want. And there is nobody to control them. The regional organizations themselves are helpless. Because anyway, the sum total of the regional organization are the leaders themselves who are dictators. So there is little they can do. As my brother said, Southern Sudan has been looted. When the countries around are watching, DRC has been looted by the country, the bordering countries there. All the looting and all the instability, all the murders and chaos, they are all facilitated from the neighboring countries there. Burundi, the man has destroyed the country, has brutalized it, and they have failed to do anything against him. still, when you come down south, Zimbabwe, the old man was all over. He did what he wants from 2007, from 2000, he lost election, 2011, lost election, brutalized everybody, sat on the people until he was overthrown. But the regional organization was just massaging him. So in such a situation, the people are helpless right now, as far as we're concerned. In short, you can say some of the regional organizations, the people, the ordinary man on the street, have lost confidence in these organizations. They are no longer of assistance to the region other than wasting the money which they need.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you are listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we are coming to you live from VOA Studios in Washington. Tonight, we are talking about the intersection of the role of the International Criminal Court and regional blocs in Africa. Our panelists are Fred Omulo, a Kenyan journalist, and Suleiman Mugula, a South Africa-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio One in Washington. Gentlemen, we all remember the basis for forming the ICC, and its mandate was to try these atrocities we're talking about, whereby the national governments couldn't or were unable or unwilling to try those offenses, and where the regional blocs couldn't come in. So, but from what we have seen so far, ICC has had no headway because there's no cooperation. So, as we said, Fred, in Kenya, for instance, the witnesses were harassed, everything was purported, the AU threatened heaven and hell. So what's the point then of ICC? Because if it can't pursue its mandate, then maybe it's also a white elephant.
Yeah, I agree with you, actually. The ICC, as we speak now, is really dead in the water. It's a white elephant. We'd probably write an obituary for it. It would have made sense if it was a global court, just like flowing out of, for example, the UN, which unites the entire world, you see, and that would be able to prosecute crimes against humanity, regardless of which country committed them. I'm speaking about examples such as the invasion of Iraq in terms of mass destruction in 2003, which was championed by the US and the UK. Why, for example, is someone like Tony Blair walking around freely? You ask yourself that question, right? Yet, you have a little war somewhere in former Yugoslavian states, Serbia, Montenegro, and those countries, Slovenia, the Balkans, and you have Slobodan Milosevic and the other people who committed crimes there, very aggressively taken into custody, questioned, tried, some of them even sentenced. You have issues, things happening around here in Africa, and you have the same things happening somewhere in Asia or in the Middle East, and no one touches some of these leaders. So, countries, some of them did not sign the Rome Statute, and that was the first. That was the original sin. The world is not equal before the eyes of the ICC, and that was the first mistake. Now, once you have that kind of uneven playing field, definitely there will always be someone who will try to challenge that imbalance, legally and illegally. By illegally, I'm talking about our African leaders. They will take advantage of that. They will mobilize the AU. They will do all sorts of pull all sorts of strings and tricks. Right now, Sudan President Omar Bashir has a warrant on his head for several years now. It's a running joke in this continent, and he attends the AU forum every year without harassment or molestation, right? Mm-hmm. So the ICC, I can't even look at that as something that was able to do anything worthwhile. It's a white elephant. It's dead in the water. The sooner we bury it and forget about it, the better.
I see. Suleiman, what's your take on the usefulness of ICC, given the headwinds from the partner states?
It is a very complex situation, really. As my brother said, at one hand, one would feel that it should be buried. On the other hand, we feel that there is a necessity to have the organization. Because really, there are a lot of atrocities, not only internationally, as my brother said, Iraq, Syria, Palestine, and other areas. But even in our continent, it is so bad. We have lost people, and there seems to be no stop to this. There seems to be no lessons, and you ask yourself, how is it going to be solved if you don't have an institution which can have an overreach? Because sometimes their internal weaknesses or their internal dynamics which may not allow these leaders to be tried. So there is a need, as my brother said, for example, he said, on the continent, we are failing to try Bashir. Southern Sudan, we are failing to reach out to these leaders because they can be able to mobilize. We have had even other smaller people like the people in DRC, like that is Kamara in Conakry, there are so many people, like even Yaya Jammeh is still there. He might escape after death of so many people at his hand. So on the other hand, there is need to strengthen this institution. But I think the biggest problem is that it has been weakened by the international politics, which is also in this area at the moment. Globalization has failed. There is a lack of trust in many of these countries in Europe, in America. There is crisis of leadership somehow. So because of these weaknesses within the European countries and international countries, it is trickling down to us. But one thing is clear, that the ordinary people on the African continent are fed up with the rhetoric, and whether we reform these institutions or we don't reform them, the people are ready to rise up and take on the leadership, the rotten leadership on the continent.
Yeah, but then where does that leave the people? You say the people are suffering. And currently there are these riots in Zimbabwe. The crackdown continues. Yeah. Many people were killed. There were reports the other day that even the forces went to the hospitals and clinics where those who had been beaten were being treated and got them from there. In Sudan, there were protests. Now, yesterday, Sudanese President Omar Bashir acknowledged that the controversial public order law and the country's deteriorating economic situation had fueled anger among the youth, leading to those protests that wanted to oust him. But they also, he also cracked heads. So the atrocities are ongoing, and where now, where do the people go? Let me start with you, Fred.
What you're seeing these governments doing is a direct reaction to how the ICC has handled cases in the recent past, how the AU has behaved. Mnangagwa knows very well that the AU is not going to give him up, and he knows that whatever case is brought to the ICC, he already has the formula to deal with it. So he can go ahead with his impunity. You can't really say that the IEC is a force for stability, okay? So it's a direct result of that, and even if we sustain the ICC and continue subscribing to it, there are people who've already seen through the whole shenanigan, and they know how to navigate their way around the legal obstacles and barriers that this global court may bring to them. On what is probably going to counterbalance this new development, because we're seeing it more and more across the continent, is locally, internal forces will reach a point where they can no longer be suppressed or disregarded. I'm seeing these voters from a different perspective. Demographically, the continent is having a very large, young and unemployed population. At the same time, it has a very, a leadership that is totally out of touch with the realities. Mm-hmm. They don't respond to the demographic changes with economic and social solutions like happens elsewhere. If you look at places like India, for example, the president recently commented that one of the recent policies within the last 2 years, I think, one of the policies that the Modi government brought up was to retire old currency notes. The aim of this move was to ensure that all the money launderers and the corrupt government officials who had hidden money away would have to come and exchange them, and then they would be caught. Mm-hmm. So a lot of old notes that had been gained through organized crime, through corruption, and through all sorts of dubious means became valueless. And what happened? Corrupt people used to park their money in real estate. And suddenly, the prices of real estate in India have just been free-falling. And the young people are able to rent and are able to buy their houses, take up mortgages. He is responding to the demographic changes in his country. It is not happening here in Africa, and the youth know only one or two ways to express themselves: protest, terrorism. Mm-hmm. Okay, mm-hmm. So at the point when these youth stop looking at each other as people from different tribes, different communities, then you start seeing the protest, as is happening in Sudan, as is happening in Zimbabwe.
I see, Suleiman, a minute or so.
We are heading for a very difficult time on the continent because, as my brother said, we have got an unprecedented leadership against becoming the well-exposed youth, unemployed, hopeless. So they have nothing to lose. So whether the international or regional organizations have failed, they are going to take on the leadership and they are going to make sure that they turn things around. It has ever happened in the Arab Spring. It has ever happened in some of the countries like Burkina Faso. But I think unless the leaders, the rusty leaders, wake up and hand over power, these young people are going to overrun them because now it is too late for them to turn things around. The policies have failed. Corruption is at the head. The poverty is heavy. So there is no way other than initiating the change the way it has been done in Ethiopia.
And briefly, talking of the youth rising up, this will be a disaster because the youth across the continent are almost the same. There are so many and unemployed and, as you say, hopeless, and they seem to be in agreement of what should be done. Briefly, Suleiman.
Yes, it has to happen the way my brother said. It is happening. I mean, Sudan, Khartoum is at a standstill. Zimbabwe is at a standstill, and Burundi is at a standstill. Rwanda is electric. Uganda is electric. Central African Republic, a little bit of cool, but it has been at a standstill for some time. So there is no way, unless there is a transition, the way it was done in Ethiopia, the way it happened in Burkina Faso, the young people are going to overrun the system. Whether chaos like that one in Libya happened, but they are fed up, they are hopeless, they are restless, they have nothing to lose. They just have to overrun these systems.
One word, Fred, you're that optimistic too?
I've seen an interesting case in South Africa. I think Julius Malema and the EFF party are going to make significant gains in the election. And they are the only reason South Africa is not up in flames right now.
I see.
They are waiting for that election. So if the government bungles, if the ANC bungles that, we'll have some fireworks down. I'm just speculating, but I think
it will happen. Unfortunately, we are out of time, gentlemen. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Fred Omulo, a Kenyan journalist, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
You're very much welcome. Our producer was Jackson Mvunganya, and our engineer tonight was Mike Dubinsky. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. In case you missed this program, you can still get it by going to our main website at www.vnews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in, and until next week, I'm your host Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you all the best.
This is VOA News.